usually around midnight, or you do try to do some serious writing. Was I bothering you when I turned that corner? Asked the woman. No. But you put yourself in contact with me, said the woman. If you think that that contact is not going to last a while, you got another thought coming. When I get through with you, sir, you are going to remember Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. I have done things, too, which I would not tell you, son. Neither tell God if he didn't already know.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Uganda drops its first Kill the Gays case after destroying the defendant. New research debunks an advantage for trans female athletes. And Langston Hughes reads a story of Black family values. Those stories and more this week, because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 7th, 2026. The first case against a gay man for violating Uganda's so-called Kill the Gays law is dismissed, but the damage has already been done. The defendant's lawyer proved to the court that his client's lengthy detention has caused serious mental illnesses, including schizophrenia. He has spent close to a year in prison as his case moved through the East African nation's legal system. Attorney Douglas Mawadri told Agence France-Presse that the judge found his client to be too mentally unstable to understand the trial process. The unnamed defendant is now 25 years old. The plight of his 41-year-old partner has not been reported. The younger man was accused of unlawful sexual intercourse in 2023, just 3 months after Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni signed the infamous and overwhelmingly popular Anti-Homosexuality Act. The law includes the death penalty for what it calls aggravated homosexuality, including repeated homosexual acts and sex that transmits HIV/AIDS or other potentially terminal illnesses. Same-gender intercourse with a minor, an elderly person, or a person with disabilities also fall into that category. Prosecutors never explained why they had lodged the original aggravated charges in this case. In January of 2024, they were lowered to unnatural offenses of having carnal knowledge against the order of nature, which is punishable by up to life in prison. The judge made sure in his February 3rd ruling that the now mentally incapacitated defendant would not face any charges. Queer advocates like Richard Lesimbo are outraged that the dismissal took almost 2 years. He told Agence France-Presse, "Detaining someone for over a year without trial is injustice at its worst."
Transgender female athletes have no physical advantage over their cisgender counterparts if they've received 1 to 3 years of gender-affirming hormone therapy. This according to new research published this week in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. 52 different studies conducted at academic and medical institutions in Brazil were considered. More than 2,900 trans women and about 2,300 trans men were involved, along with more than 560 cis women and more than 660 cis men. Most of the studies focused exclusively on adult athletes, but 7 included teens. The author's conclusion is that existing evidence does not support theories of inherent athletic advantages for transgender women over cisgenders. The academics lamented the relative dearth of top-level studies on trans athletes and called for further research. What they know now is that the current data does not justify blanket bans on trans athletes. University of Sao Paulo physician and co-author Bruno Guailano told Spanish-language newspaper El País, "Most of these policies are based on the assumption that transgender women retain inherent physical advantages and would therefore dominate women's competitions. The data does not support this idea."
fewer transgender people were murdered around the world between October 2024 and September 2025. That's the good news. The bad news is that there were still 281 trans or gender diverse homicide victims during that time period, according to the global group Trans Murder Monitoring. Brazil is the worst place on the planet for trans people to live. It's topped the list ever since worldwide monitoring began in 2008. 77 murder victims in 2024-2025 were trans women or female presenting. 3 were trans men. 88% were black or of mixed race. 14% engaged in some form of activism. Those figures were released this week by Brazil's National Association of Transvestites and Transgender People. The group warns, the message could not be clearer. Lethal violence is now compounded by direct persecution of those who organize, mobilize, and expose injustice. The 80 Brazilian victims in 2024-2025 are still an improvement over the two previous years. In 2024, there were 122 murder of trans people reported by the Monitoring Project, and 145 in 2023. A significant number each year were sex workers. The South American country's civil society has tried to stem the tide. Supreme Court rulings have included marriage equality, adoption rights, and the ability of trans people to change their legal name and gender without having to undergo gender-affirming surgery. Homophobia and transphobia are criminal offenses in Brazil as a form of racism. Queer advocates hope those advances have been deterrents.
A Christian teacher is fighting a losing battle against the Montgomery County, Maryland Public School District's policy on using the chosen names and pronouns of her trans and non-binary students. Kimberly Polk is a substitute teacher in the district, and she claimed that being forced to follow the policy violated her constitutional, religious, and First Amendment rights. A 3-judge panel of the Richmond, Virginia-based 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals voted 2-1 on January 28th to support the school district upholding lower court rulings. Judge Robert B. King wrote for the majority, "How a teacher addresses a particular student in a particular classroom and whether a teacher communicates with the student's parents is merely a part of that teacher's job description." Polk's attorney, Rick Claybrook, told the Washington Post that he and his client are considering an appeal to the full Fourth Circuit or to the U.S. Supreme Court.
A record number of proud LGBTQ athletes are competing in the 2026 Winter Olympics in Milan and Cortina, Italy. The queer website Outsports.com counts 44, including Amber Glenn, the first publicly out queer women's figure skater in Winter Olympic history. She's a top U.S. hope for a figure skating medal. Ellis Lundholm of Sweden is the first out transgender competitor in the Winter Games. He'll be flying freestyle downhill on uneven terrain as a moguls skier. Team LGBTQ includes 34 women and 10 men. The 22-out female hockey players make it the runaway queerest Winter Olympic sport. 6 LGBTQ men and 1 woman will be figure skating. Alpine and freestyle skiing boasts 6 queer competitors each. Speed skating has 4, skeleton has 2, and there's 1 each from snowboarding, curling, and biathlon. Outsports.com's initial review finds queer Winter Olympians from at least 13 countries, the UK, the US, Canada, Finland, Sweden, Austria, Belgium, Brazil, France, Germany, Italy, Switzerland, and the Czech Republic. Outsports.com uses a pretty basic methodology. They review social media profiles for dozens of athletes looking for telltale clues about their being LGBTQ, and then contact the leading prospects to verify. You can check Outsports.com for more details about a wide range of competitors and updated stats. The Olympic opening ceremonies were held on February 6th.
Finally, thousands hit the streets of Melbourne on February 1st for the 31st annual Midsummer Pride March. The event's CEO, Karen Bryant, said in a message before the march began, "Though global rifts threaten us, we celebrate with pride in a way that is meaningful for us all." In the words of Victoria's State Commissioner for LGBTQIA+ Communities, Joe Ball, "Firefighters, scouts, nurses, teachers, councils, corporates, health services and schools, every part of our private, public, and civil society on motorbikes, using walkers, wheelchairs, and prams. We have Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, and many people of all different faiths. Every major political party is represented, standing together, united. All of us gathering under shared values of equality, dignity, freedom, and safety. And this is how we do it in Victoria." Victorian Premier Jacinta Allen was also there with the biggest Midsummer Pride crowd in years. Her social media message read in part, "Pride is about being able to live your life openly without fear or apology. To anyone who's ever been made to feel different just because of who you are, you will always belong in our Victoria."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 7th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is The Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This week we honor the February birthday of Alice Walker.
"Dear Nettie, I don't write to God no more. I write to you." "What happened to God?" asked Shirk. "Who that?" I say. She look at me serious. "Big a devil as you is," I say, "you not worried about no God, surely." She said, "Wait a minute. Hold on just a minute here. Just cause I don't harass it like some people does, no, don't mean I ain't got religion." "What God do for me?" I asked. She says, "Silly," like she's shocked. "He gave you life, good health, and a good woman that love you to death."
Alice Walker is an important LGBTQ figure as an openly bisexual author and activist who normalized queer Black love in literature, most notably through the central relationship in her Pulitzer Prize-winning 1982 novel, The Color Purple. She challenged societal norms by depicting lesbian relationships as beautiful, natural, and liberating.
Now let's rewind to a few February key queer milestones. In 2020, Virginia became the first state in the American South to offer legal protections in employment, housing, and public accommodations to LGBTQ people. In 2011, civil unions, a separate and unequal version of gay marriage, are legalized in Hawaii.
A reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
That's a classic by openly closeted composer Billy Strayhorn, who put the swing into the notorious heterosexual Duke Ellington's jazz that lit the Harlem Renaissance of Langston Hughes. Historian Henry Louis Gates Jr. says that the 1920s and 30s era in New York's African-American community was surely as gay as it was black. Hughes apparently eluded the romantic advances of his gay literary peers Alain Locke and Count T. Cullen, and scholars now speculate that the one-time best friend of possibly bi Zora Neale Hurston was asexual. In 1963, the iconic author was the guest of a young reporter named Eve Corey at the studios of WBAI in New York City. We'll hear an excerpt of their conversation, followed by Hughes reading his short story, Thank You, Ma'am.
We kind of got you up this morning or this afternoon. It's 4 o'clock, and you say that you first get up at 4.
Well, I work at night, you see, and so sometimes I don't start writing until 12 or 1 o'clock because there's not much use trying to do anything that requires a great deal of concentration in New York in the daytime or in the early evening. One has usually many interruptions during the day. The phone rings 40 times. Strangers come by, relatives you haven't seen in 10 years.
They just drop in.
Drop in time. And you can't say no. So the result is that when peace and quiet settles down, it's usually around midnight, you see. Then I may try to, or usually do try to do some serious writing.
Mm. Sort of the quiet time for you. And
yeah.
Then you spend the rest of the day doing what?
I read the mail, and the mail is... Oh, maybe sometimes a 2 or 3 hour task if one answers some of the letters immediately.
Mm.
Now that I'm writing for the New York Post, I get quite a deal of fan mail. And
what kind of letters do you get?
On the whole, very cordial and usually nice letters commenting on some aspect with which the writer agrees. But
I knew there was going to be a but.
There's always a few letters of disagreement and sometimes violent disagreement. And once in a while from people who... are not very pro-civil rights. One gets angry and unsigned letters, Ku Klux Klan type of letters.
Really?
Yes.
Are these postmarked New York or?
Most of them are. Most of them seem to be Brooklyn.
You live in Harlem yourself.
I live in Harlem, which I like very much. Mm. So Harlem is no longer a place where you have to live if you don't want to, if you're colored. But I happen to like it very much. It's a very lively community, and so I live there. But many of my friends live in Park West Village in the 80s or down in the village or in Brooklyn or in the Bronx, you see. And there is, of course, housing difficulty still for colored peoples, but not anywhere near what they used to be.
Mm-hmm. You originally came from Joplin, Missouri. Did you move directly to Harlem?
Oh, no. I was just born in Joplin.
I see.
I don't even remember it. I've lived so many places since then.
Well, then you're a native New Yorker, almost.
Well, I've been here more or less off and on for at least 25 years.
You worked as a seaman, and you went to West Africa and Europe. Which sounds quite fascinating, especially the West Africa part.
Yeah, I had a wonderful series of trips and enjoyed them very much. And sometimes I wish I were a seaman again. You get to travel. On freight boats, I've never worked on passenger ships, but on freight boats they go rather leisurely, you know. And they stay in odd ports to which one would not otherwise be likely to visit. Can I read it now?
Yes, sure. Go right ahead.
All right. It's called Thank You, Ma'am. She was a large woman with a large purse that had everything in it but a hammer and nails. It had a long strap, and she carried it slung across her shoulder. It was about 11 o'clock at night, dark, and she was walking alone when a boy ran up behind her and tried to snatch her purse. The strap broke with the single sudden tug that the boy gave it from behind. But the boy's weight and the weight of the purse combined caused him to lose his balance. Instead of taking off full blast as he had hoped, the boy fell on his back on the sidewalk and his legs flew up. The large woman simply turned around and kicked him right square in his blue-jeaned sitter. Then she reached down, picked the boy up by his shirt front, and shook him until his teeth rattled. After that, the woman said, "Pick up my pocketbook, boy, and give it here." She held him tightly, but she bent down enough to permit him to stoop and pick up her purse. Then she said, "Now ain't you ashamed of yourself?" Firmly gripped by his shirt front, the boy said, "Yes'm." The woman said, "What did you want to do it for?" The boy said, "I didn't aim to." She said, "You a lie." By that time, two or three people passed, stopped, turned around on the street to look, and some stood watching. "If I turn you loose, will you run?" asked the woman. "Yes'm," said the boy. "Then I won't turn you loose," said the woman. She did not release him. "Lady, I'm sorry," whispered the boy. "Your face is dirty. I got a great mind to wash your face. Ain't you got nobody home, boy, to tell you to wash your face?" "No'm," said the boy. "Then it will get washed this evening," said the large woman, starting up the street, dragging the frightened boy behind her. He looked as if he were 14 or 15, frail and willow wild, in tennis shoes and blue jeans. The woman said, "You ought to be my son. I would teach you right from wrong. Least I can do right now is to wash your face. Are you hungry?" "No'm," said the being dragged boy. "I just want you to turn me loose." "Was I bothering you when I turned that corner?" asked the woman. "No'm." "But you put yourself in contact with me," said the woman. "If you think that that contact is not going to last a while, you got another thought coming. When I get through with you, sir, you are going to remember Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones." Sweat popped out on the boy's face, and he began to struggle. Mrs. Jones stopped, jerked him around in front of her, put a half Nelson around his neck, and continued to drag him up the street. When she got to her door, she dragged the boy inside, down a hall, and into a large kitchenette-furnished room at the rear of the house. She switched on the light and left the door open. The boy could hear other roomers laughing and talking in the large house. Some of their doors were open, too, so he knew that he and the woman were not alone. The woman still had him by the neck in the middle of her room. She said, "What's your name?" "Roger," answered the boy. "Then, Roger, you go to that sink and wash your face," said the woman. Whereupon she turned him loose at last. Roger looked at the door, looked at the woman, looked at the door, and went to the sink. "Let the water run until it gets warm," she said. "Here's a clean towel." "You going to take me to jail?" asked the boy, bending over the sink. "Not with that face. I would not take you nowhere," said the woman. "Here I am trying to get home to cook me a bite to eat, and you snatch my pocketbook. Maybe you ain't been to your supper either, late as it is. Have you?" "There's nobody home in my house," said the boy. "Then we'll eat," said the woman. "I believe you're hungry, or been hungry, to try to snatch my pocketbook." "I want a pair of blue suede shoes," said the boy. "Well, you didn't have to snatch my pocketbook to get some blue suede shoes," said Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. "You could have asked me." "Ma'am?" The water dripping from his face, the boy looked at her. There was a long pause, a very long pause. After he had dried his face, and not knowing what else to do, dried it again, the boy turned around, wondering what next. The door was open. He could make a dash for it down the hall. He could run, 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 run. The woman was sitting on the daybed. After a while, she said, "I were young once, and I wanted things I could not get." There was another long pause. The boy's mouth opened. Then he frowned, not knowing he frowned. The woman said, "You thought I was going to say but, didn't you? You thought I was going to say, but I didn't snatch people's pocketbooks." "Well, I wasn't going to say that." Pause. Silence. "I have done things, too, which I would not tell you, son. Neither tell God if he didn't already know. Everybody's got something in common. So you sit on a while I go and fix us something to eat. You might run that comb through your hair so you'll look presentable." In another corner of the room, behind a screen, was a gas plate and an ice box. Mrs. Jones got up and went behind the screen. The woman did not watch the boy to see if he was going to run now, nor did she watch her purse, which he left behind her on the daybed. But the boy took care to sit on the far side of the room, away from the purse, where he thought she could easily see him out of the corner of her eye if she wanted to. He did not trust the woman not to trust him, and he did not want to be mistrusted now. "Do you need somebody to go to the store?" asked the boy, "maybe to get some milk or something?" "I don't believe I do," said the woman, "unless you just want sweet milk yourself. I was going to make cocoa out of this canned milk I got here." "That will be fine," said the boy. She heated some lima beans and ham she had in the icebox, made the cocoa, and set the table. The woman did not ask the boy anything about where he lived, or his folks, or anything else that would embarrass him. Instead, as they ate, she told him about her job in a hotel beauty shop that stayed open late at night, what the work was like, and how all kinds of women came in and out, blondes, redheads, and Spanish. Then she cut him a half of her 10-cent cake. "Eat some more, son," she said. When they were finished eating, she got up and said, "Now here, take this $10 and buy yourself some blue suede shoes. And next time, do not make the mistake of latching on to my pocketbook nor nobody else's, because shoes got by devilish ways will burn your feet. I got to get my rest now, but from here on in, son, I hope you will behave yourself." She led him down the hall to the front door and opened it. "Good night. Behave yourself, boy," she said, looking out into the street as he went down the steps. The boy wanted to say something other than, "Thank you, ma'am," to Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. But although his lips moved, he couldn't even say that as he turned at the foot of the barren stoop and looked up at the large woman in the doorway. Then she shut the door.
You've been listening to Langston Hughes reading his 1958 story, Thank You, Ma'am.
Billy Strayhorn.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael Taylor Gray and Tanya Kane Perry, and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lund and produced by and co-hosted with Brian DeShazer. Thanks to the Pacifica Radio Archives for the Langston Hughes feature, which was edited by Greg Gordon. Chicago and Duke Ellington and his orchestra featuring Billy Strayhorn performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks David Hunt of Raleigh, North Carolina, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on Lofty FM, Adelaide Hills, South Australia, KGay, Thousand Palms, Coachella Valley, California, WCRS, Columbus, Ohio, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.